Have you ever seen a living fossil? Or Wollemi pine, perhaps? Or a lungfish, the kind that stops a dam being built in Queensland? Or a coelacanth, another ancient fish they catch occasionally off Madagascar? New Zealand has a couple of living fossils, the tuatara, for instance. But a living fossil marsupial? How likely is that? Well, that's Ben Keir's current quest to map the ancestral lineage of Australia's icon.
In this case, let's talk about kangaroos. A living fossil here would be something about as big as a football, quite cute, red-coloured, very, very fluffy, and with a long, scaly tail. The interesting thing is it doesn't hop like your standard kangaroo. It kind of gallops a little bit. Also, if you watch it eating, it doesn't necessarily eat grass. It'll take all sorts of fruit, fungi, and maybe even insects and that sort of thing. So it's an omnivore. Our living fossil is, in fact, an animal called the musky rat kangaroo, and today it's restricted to the rainforests up in northeast Queensland. However, if we look at the genetics of the musky rat kangaroo, it's effectively just very different to everything else, which you might expect. The musky rat kangaroo, Hypsipremnodon, is in fact the last vestige of an ancient lineage going back 26 million years or more. And its family tree is very, very, very interesting. Its earliest relatives are animals called balbarids. And balbarids are kind of sort of weird fanged kangaroos that sort of galloped around in the forests of what is now Queensland and Central Australia from about 26 million years ago. The beauty of these animals is that they're totally extinct, but their nearest relative is Hypsipremnodon. The other thing about Hypsipremnodon, obviously, is its dietary sort of specialisation is very different to your average grey kangaroos, which you see hopping around down.
It eats meat.
It eats, a component of its diet is, in fact, other animals. The carnivorous kangaroos are a very enigmatic group. We really only have bits and pieces of these animals. We actually don't have any bodies, so we don't know how they got around. But what we can base them on is their balbarid relatives, which you do have complete skeletons, and they're the oldest complete skeletons of kangaroos we have. Proplyopians, or the carnivorous kangaroos, are very different, though. If you imagine, the head is something like, let's say, a potoroo, a rat kangaroo type of thing, but in its mouth is a set of garden shears. It has huge premolars that kind of work against each other to slice through meat and probably a degree of vegetation. Imagine it's like the kangaroo equivalent of a bear. And this thing is kind of galloping around in the forest 26 million years ago. And Hypsipremnodon's nearest relatives are these carnivorous lineages. And it's very, very interesting we have this sort of archetypal dietary holdover that's still hanging around. It is basically the last vestige of a once hugely diverse and very, very bizarre archaic radiation. What does that mean, and who really cares? Well, the important part about this is Hypsipremnodon is endangered. It's a lineage which is under pressure from habitat destruction. They're building golf courses in North Queensland and knocking down the last rainforest that's housing this sort of archaic relic.
But how do you know about its lineage? Okay, you look at the molecules, you look at the genetics, but how do you work out from the genetics how old?
There is a method you can use with genetics called molecular clocks. The idea is that basically genes evolve at certain rates, and you can then sort of predict from that rate of change when things might have diverged, when lineages split from one another. So from that, the use of molecular clocks, we can infer that the lineage that contained Hypsipremnodon is quite old, probably much older than the actual fossil record that we have. The thing is, though, to calibrate these molecular dates, otherwise you're just guessing, you need the fossils, you need paleontology, and you need the genetics. You've melded it all together, and this gives you the closest stab we have at reconstructing the evolution of this iconic Australian group, the kangaroos.
And that's what you do?
That's what we're doing. The core of the research we're tackling here at La Trobe University. And it's not just kangaroos. The ultimate aim of this is to look at all sorts of marsupial radiations. What we've been able to do is tap into some of these resources. For example, we've looked at an animal called Calopremnus. Calopremnus was a little rat kangaroo that lived in central Australia very nicely in the deserts, thank you very much, up until about 1936, and then it disappeared. The idea is it's gone extinct. Basically, there was possibly some sightings in the 50s, but nobody's seen one since then. There are preserved skins in museums, so we've been able to extract DNA from these skins and then put our DNA sequence into our sort of tree orbits of relationships based on molecular information and determine where this extinct fits within our rat kangaroo radiation. So the idea here is a total data approach, if you like, drawing information from the fossils. So the problem is when we're talking about ancient DNA, you're generally only talking a few tens of thousands of years at the absolute maximum. DNA degrades very, very quickly. So this is the problem with when we're talking about extracting material from very, very old stuff. So fossils of 26 million years old, you have absolute Buckley's chance of getting DNA out of them at this stage. So we're reliant upon looking at the fossils themselves. That's one line of evidence. The recently extinct DNA, if you like, we're using from relatively recent animals, museum skins, is another line of evidence. What we can see by looking at the fossil record with our molecular stuff is that certainly kangaroos have undergone a whole series of changes in terms of their large-scale faunal extinctions and replacements over the last at least 10 to 15 million years. So we're talking about Hypsipremnodon as a living fossil and all these bizarre carnivorous things and all these other weird archaic radiations. They all disappear at about 10 million years ago. What happened? Sort of on the back of this extinction, we see the evolution of modern lineages. So the possibility here is we're looking at an extinction and replacement event. Kangaroos have effectively knocked off all the older ones and then replaced them with a bunch of new ones. The other interesting thing that occurs about this sort of 10 million year bracket is the evolution of arid zone grasslands in Australia. The climate dries out. So the early part of the sort of record at this time, let's say from about 10 million years backwards, is a very warm, wet conditions throughout Australia. You've got heavy forested areas, rainforests, all this sort of thing. By 10 million years, that starts to go. And as you might expect, animals adapt. Some don't, so our carnivorous kangaroos clearly go extinct. And the fact that Hypsipremnodon today is found in rainforests and is restricted to rainforests might also be one of these archaic holdover features. It's living where its ancestors did. Modern kangaroos, obviously, have adapted to eat grass, they've adapted hopping to get around in these big areas, so our galloping kangaroos started to hop, and they also developed really big body sizes. So the size of the modern greys is probably something to do with the fact that they've now got big open environments, they're processing grass, which means you have to have a big gut to process all this stuff, because grass is very hard to digest, and you simply just get bigger. So this is exactly what we see in the fossil record, and exactly what our data is starting to put out. So effectively, we're now looking at evolution in concert with climate change. So it's drawing in this other line of evidence to really start to look at what's shaping kangaroos as we see them today, what shaped them in the past, and what does this mean about how they're going to adapt to climate change in the future? Clearly, the body plan of kangaroos is incredibly successful. They've been around for a very, very long time and doing pretty much the same sorts of things. But what we can see from this extinction replacement event is, in fact, that perhaps we've got a sort of incredibly plastic body form that will adapt to relative changes. And if they've adapted to aridity in the past, they'll certainly do it again. So I suspect that our large kangaroos will do very, very well in the face of climate change in the future. Thank you very much.
Finally, Ben, you mentioned living fossil in Queensland. Do you think that people playing golf and the local folk who are not necessarily scientists are impressed by the fact that they don't just have an endangered animal, but they have a living fossil to worry about?
Absolutely. I mean, certainly most people would think that looking at old bones and bizarre little kangaroos hopping around in the undergrowth is fairly esoteric stuff, and who really cares? This is the whole point, and conservation is one of the angles we'd like to push with this. Certainly, people looking at skeletons in museums and this sort of thing perceive dinosaurs as something fabulous, but what does it all mean? Fossils and genetics and all this sort of stuff has the potential to really shape the way people look and perceive their environment and care about their environment. This is the main point. So what we can do with this sort of analysis, if you like, is emphasise particular species such as the musky rat kangaroo. So like you say, somebody, you know, teeing off on the number four hole fires a ball into the undergrowth and spots a little red kangaroo hanging around. They don't know what it is. And that's purely a problem of education and marketing. Science needs to market itself, and it needs to market the important bits that it's putting out. So if you can say, OK, we have this living fossil, it carries a lot more impact in the media than saying, OK, we've got something that's pretty genetically very weird and has this bunch of old fossils that seem to be related to it. People need to become aware of what things are. And this is where this kind of work can really come to the fore. And if you can conclusively demonstrate it with hard science that, yes, this thing actually is, quote unquote, a living fossil in itself, we can then try and get people to understand and be aware of this and then get governments to understand it. And once a government understands it, they'll start to put money into looking after these vital pieces of Australian biodiversity, which would otherwise go pretty much unnoticed. And they're really globally significant species.
biodiversity. Get used to that term. Next year, following Darwin, Galileo and astronomy, 2010 is the International Year of Biodiversity. And that's what Dr. Ben Keir wants us to consider with living fossil kangaroos as an example. Next week, The Science Show asks whether groups of people are more likely to be peaceful than individuals. And I'll talk to Alan Joyce, the head of Qantas, trained in science. Production by David Fisher and Charlie McCune. I'm Robin Williams.